Hey, thanks for listening to our audiocast for this Monday, February 11th, 2008 from AvWeb, the Internet's general aviation news service and magazine. Brought to you today by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Learn more or subscribe at www.aviationconsumer.com. And we're speaking today with Michael Nolan, a professor of aviation technology and director of Purdue's Air Traffic Control Program and author of the book Fundamentals of Air Traffic Control. And Michael is speaking to us from West Lafayette, Indiana. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how you doing today?
I'm reading a little bit about you. You're a former air traffic controller, but you're also a pilot. Tell us a little bit about your flying credentials.
Well, I actually got started in school getting my airframe and power plant mechanics license and pilot's licenses. Thought I wanted to be an airline pilot like lots of 16-year-old kids do. Somewhere around that time period, I also went up in a control tower and found that fascinating. So coming out of college, I had some choices. I graduated from college in the late 70s when the airline industry wasn't doing real well, so I decided to take a shot at air traffic control. And I worked for a couple of years for the FAA as a tower and approach controller, was involved in the air traffic controllers strike in 1981 with everybody else, left and went back to Purdue University where I had been a flight instructor previously, started working in their aircraft maintenance program, and then lo and behold, a couple of years later, the FAA approached a lot of schools saying they'd like an air traffic control training program, so I set one up. So I've kind of been around the block doing all of it.
This is a great time for us to be talking to you because we have what appears to be looming on the horizon, a crisis in air traffic control. What is that coming crisis as you see it?
Well, the problem's really twofold. One, air traffic controllers essentially have to work somewhere around 25 years, somewhere in that range, before they can retire. And as you well know, in 1981, a good chunk of the controllers were fired, and their replacements were hired in the next couple of years. So you have a large number of controllers that were hired between, say, 1982 and 1990, all becoming eligible for retirement. Now, that spreads out among a few more years, but where the FAA really didn't need to hire anybody in the 90s and early in this century, now they need to replace a lot of these controllers. At the same time, air traffic has historically grown 5% or so a year in the United States for the first time in 2001 and 2002 because of the events of 9/11. We had a drop in air traffic, but that's now picked up. We're back up to pre-9/11 traffic, so we've got a bunch of controllers retiring, and it takes a long time to retrain them, and we have a lot more airplanes flying out there. And even with traffic picking up, the structural way that the airlines are operating is a little bit different. 10 years ago, when you went to a hub airport, most of the airplanes were fairly large, 727s, 737s. But now, we've seen the explosion of RJs and other smaller aircraft. So to move the same amount of people anymore takes more airplanes. So it's kind of a combination of things. We have more and more people that want to fly and more controllers that need to be retrained.
What specific measures would you propose to increase the capacity of the system?
You need to have more throughput through the system. Right now, we essentially run airplanes 1,000 feet apart and 5 miles apart because that's, in essence, as close as we can run them with the accuracy of the entire system we've got up there, navigation, communications, radar. There's only so far you can push this. So unless you're going to change the infrastructure, which we have the capability of doing, but it's going to cost some money, we're going to be stuck with 5 miles of separation. If you want to get twice as many airplanes, you're going to have to be able to somehow cut that separation in half.
Are you proposing to ramp up introduction of ADS-B, or do you have a better solution?
It's kind of analogous to the old, I like to use the old telephone system when we had operators pulling wires out and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just keep adding more operators. Even if you added more phones, eventually we were going to have, 10 million operators. You had to come up with a new way to do it, and we did with electronic switching and things of that sort. So obviously we have to make sure that we don't decrease safety. That's a given. But is there a way to do it? And really, you come down to two things. It's going to take funding, and it's going to take an incentive. And right now, there's neither.
Well, you have the administration and others pushing for the user fees and other taxes. Where do you fall on that?
Oh, you're going to try and catch me on that political one, huh?
Well,
we all know, quite frankly, the trust fund is like Social Security. It claims it's there. It's not. we know that that's been spent. It would require an appropriation. Will the government actually appropriate the money? That's the first question. You know, you're absolutely right. If we would spend the money that we take in on taxes and fees on aviation, that would solve half of this. Again, looking at the organization, I think the FAA does a wonderful job of affecting safety. We really have a safe system. And a lot of people that like to talk about the near misses and things like that, they do happen, but we have an exceptionally safe air traffic control system. How do we make it an incentive for the FAA to make that system more efficient? How can it become more cost effective? How can we handle more airplanes? In reality, there's no advantage, nothing for the FAA, no reason for them to try to increase some things. It simply makes life harder for them. So how do we build in an incentive? People talk about privatizing the system. There are some issues with safety on that one. Is there a way to bring in some of the private sector attributes that would give the FAA or some other operational authority the incentive to make the system more efficient?
Right.
And I really think that's one of the biggest problems.
When you consider the hiring and training frenzy to replace controllers that's currently going on, do you see that affecting safety at some point?
Well, it absolutely does. It'll be very hard to define. The problem a lot of people look at is safety being a mid-air accident. We haven't had a serious mid-air accident between two airliners in decades. So, you know, if one occurs next year, is that because of the staffing or is it not? You could argue that all day. There have been more and more operational errors, I think. I think there are other accidents that I could attribute to lower staffing and so forth. A good example is the accident that occurred, about a year and a half ago down in Lexington, Kentucky, where the airplane ran off the end of the runway on takeoff.
Was on the wrong runway, yeah.
Was that an air traffic control fault? No. I mean, let's face it, the pilot took off the wrong runway. It was unlit. There were a lot of errors there. But we're all trying to back each other up.
Sure.
And apparently, at least from what I understand, the facility was short-staffed. There was only one controller. He was doing some other things. Might he have picked that up if they had two controllers? Maybe. But that's why you have two pilots on an airplane and lots of things to provide a backup for each other. When you start running a real thin system with controllers that maybe don't have the experience, you've got to somehow compensate for that. And I'm not really sure we're doing that. Will that cause an accident? I don't ever want to predict it. An accident will occur. It does keep us from expanding the system, though. I would say that. I'm not so sure I would ever tell anyone the system is less safe. I think it's pretty safe. I think they just said 2007 was the highest delays in the last decade.
Yes, I read
that. That's going to become more and more commonplace.
I've enjoyed spending some time with you today, and I can't get away without letting you get in a plug for your book. It looks very interesting. Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. I teach air traffic control at Purdue University, and the one thing I noticed a long time ago is that, you know, there's a lot of government documents out there, a lot of material out there that explained what gets done or what do controllers do, but not a lot of people got into the why. And I'd be asked that as an instructor. You know, it's kind of like dealing with your kids. You'd tell them what the rule is, and then they'd go, well, why is it that? And then I'd have to think, I don't know. So a lot of that came from trying to figure out, why is the system the way it is? Why are airways 8 miles wide? Why do we do the things the way we do? And I tried to find out what it was, and then I figured if I could figure it out, the least I could do is write it down and let my students figure it out. So that's where the book came from.
Called Fundamentals of Air Traffic Control. Sounds very interesting. I think one description said it was like a college textbook.
That's exactly what it is.
And Michael, thanks for your time today.
Certainly. It's been a pleasure.
Michael Nolan with Purdue University. Today's report was brought to you by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Learn more at www.aviationconsumer.com. And by the way, we love to get news tips from our readers and listeners. So if you see a general aviation news event happen or see a GA story that you think we should be aware of, please let us know about it. News tips at avweb.com. Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening.